Ah, yes, it's that time again. Just when you think you have it all figured out, something comes along that makes you question everything. This is Unexplained Incorporated, and we are open for business. We just want to know.
Ready to believe you.
Ready to believe you. It's all true. All of it.
Ah, yes, it is that time again, my friends. This is your time for the Friday Night Fright. This is Unexplained Incorporated. I am your host, Phantom Phil. And I hope all of you are doing well tonight. I am very excited about this show that I have for you tonight. As just the other day, actually, I recorded my first ever interview with the first guest in the history of this podcast. That man's name is Daniel Cumerlato. He is based out of Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. And he runs ghostwalks.com. What is that all about? Well, we're going to find out in the interview. But I just have to explain something real quick. My original concept for this show at the end of each month was to do a haunted walk review. And I was going to do it through the Ghost Walks. I had one booked in Hamilton on Friday the 13th. Of March, which was a very bad day for a lot of people. You're going to hear about that in the interview. You'll hear why I didn't end up going, even though the walk still did end up taking place. I was going to talk about that at the end of March. However, once the outbreak happened, I had to rearrange a whole bunch of stuff with my life. I launched the podcast a week later than intended. And for obvious reasons, I never went. And I was supposed to go this weekend to Niagara-on-the-Lake on a ghost walk through Daniel and his people. And Niagara-on-the-Lake, Ontario, is known as the most haunted town in the entire province. And they have a rich history in this sort of thing. There used to be a paranormal museum based out of there. I don't think it's open anymore. It's either went out of business, or it's just closed to the public and is a private residence now. I'm not sure. But so much history there. And Daniel and I got in touch with each other. He actually reached out to me about a week or two ago and asked me if I wanted a refund or a reschedule. And I just told him a reschedule would be fine for when it is safe to do haunted walks at some point again, whenever that may be. And then I just asked him on a whim if he wanted to do the interview, and he did. We got it recorded. It's just over half an hour long for you. It's going to take up the duration of this show. And to be perfectly honest, this interview went way better than I could have imagined it. And Daniel and I both had some prior commitments the other day, so we couldn't talk any longer than we were able to, but I'm sure somewhere down the road, he will come back on the show and get a little bit more in depth on some of the subjects we've covered. But what we do cover is this. Daniel was a paranormal investigator from 1999 till around 2004. And as we're going to hear in this interview, it is a very difficult environment to navigate yourself through, not only as an investigator, but as a business owner and operator as well. 5 years is, in fact, quite a long time for some of these paranormal investigation businesses, and he's going to talk about what a tough trek it was and how he transitioned from that into booking and promoting the Ghost Walks tours, which he does up until the present day. And we're going to hear about some crazy experiences he had as an investigator, and some fair warning for those of you who may want to get into this professionally or do some amateur investigations on your own. Some words of caution will be in this interview that you do not want to miss. And Daniel also lays out very eloquently and professionally what goes into a good story and a good ghost walk and what goes into a bad one. You might be very surprised where he went to some famous ghost or haunted tours down in the States that were incredibly disappointing to him. We're going to hear that as well. But first, we kind of deal with the elephant in the room, which is the one that none of us can escape from, and that is the effect of COVID-19. Now, Daniel is one of many, many individuals who have been hit really hard by the pandemic and the measures of lockdown, social and physical distancing. We're going to hear how that is affecting his business and his bottom line, and we're going to get some of his thoughts as to how and when this thing might clear up and how it's going to affect his business moving forward. On behalf of Unexplained Incorporated, I wish Daniel and his crew all the best for the future and look forward to going on some walks and having further discussions down the road, and hope that everything turns out okay for him and his people. And since this is my soapbox, I just want to throw out a real quick story that is loosely connected to all of this. Is later in the day after interviewing Daniel, I went out to a big retail store to pick up some groceries and essentials. And it's the first time I went to a big store since, well, everything changed, and it's become a totally different world out there. And it went very smoothly. I didn't look forward to going particularly, but everything turned out okay. The experience itself was just a little strange with the social distancing measures, and that story you're hearing on the news about people littering medical gloves, it's all true. I saw way too many on the ground in the plaza I was at, as I had to wait a good 20 plus minutes in line just to get in. And that's a problem that's, you know, that's got to go, but hopefully we can all work on that. But another thing that really caught my attention was the aura of just general suspicion that was in the air at this Walmart I went to. And yeah, a lot of people they're wearing the protective equipment. They got gloves, face masks. I saw someone in like a full upgraded gas mask, which, you know, to each their own, whatever they want to do that makes them feel safe. As for me, I just had a little thing of hand sanitizer with me, just kind of scrub my hands, keep them clean as I was shopping, as I was going. And that's all I felt I needed. I didn't go the extra mile with the protective equipment like some others do. And I think both sides are okay as long as, you know the risks and you know what you're getting into. But I noticed too that so many people were looking over their shoulder, because some of the aisles in this store are very narrow and you have to get a little close to people sometimes, even if you don't want to. You don't have a choice if you want to pass them. and I had to do it a couple of times. And I learned a very valuable lesson in doing this. And whenever people were looking over their shoulder or kind of giving me a look, getting too close at them, just out of instinct, I just sent them a smile. And, you know, this may sound corny and cliche, but once I did that, I found it disarmed them. And that aura of slight hostility and suspicion disappeared. And where am I going with all this? I just want to say that, I mean, there's a few things I wish would happen once this thing dies down and blows over and we slowly start to get a lot of things back to the way they were as much as possible, even though some may not be. I really have this strong wish and desire for people to become more informed with what's going on around them. This whole way we digest and consume our news from across the world, it's not working. It's not good enough anymore. Forming your beliefs and opinions from reading headlines or small snippets from the newspaper or big corporate media with the headlines that only take you so far into the story and don't tell you the whole story. I just want to say it's about time, especially if you're at home in quarantine and you're running out of things to do, start listening to podcasts. And if you listen to this one, even better. You will never, ever hear me beg for subscriptions or likes. If you like it, you like it. This is a labor of love for me. I do want to grow it and possibly monetize it down the road. But when you listen to podcasts like this one and many great others that are out there that I listen to on my own time, if you go onto YouTube and watch certain videos, watch some alternative media, consume some of it, watch broadcasters who aren't affiliated with the big mainstream media corporations who are putting out stories that just are not being talked about. And however and wherever you consume your news or media, just remember to do your own research and that the truth lies in the middle, because without alternative and underground sources of media, I would feel very, very lost with what's going on in the world right now. And comparing their information with the information I get from the mainstream media and other places, I kind of feel like I'm a little more ahead of the curve of not only what's going on, but what's potentially about to happen in the weeks and months. And it's a big reason why I'm not maybe as afraid as some people are about this whole thing. And I believe it's a big reason why when I go to the store nowadays and stock up, I don't feel I need to wear a whole plethora of protective equipment, or I don't need to tense up and look over my shoulder if somebody needs to walk past me in an aisle. So if anybody benefits from expanding their palette of how they consume media and information, then thank you for sitting through this. I feel this is one of the most important aspects of this particular moment in time, is that we have to open our minds and gather more information to each do our own part to make things better for our day-to-day lives. This is Phantom Phil, and once again, I thank you for listening. And I believe it is time to get to this interview with Daniel Cumerlato from Ghost Walks. Here it is. Enjoy. At this moment in time, I am very pleased to announce the first guest for the Unexplained Incorporated podcast. There will be many more, I'm sure. But for Ontario people, if you are familiar with the website ghostwalks.com,
I have the man behind the whole thing, Daniel. How are you doing today, Daniel?
Good, Phil. How are you?
Oh, I am tremendous. Thank you again for taking the time to do this. I'm going to share something with you real quick before we start. I discovered your website earlier this year in 2020, and I was looking for ways to make this podcast more interactive and not just make it about exclusive stories and interviews, but also to bring in experiences. So what I had planned was I was going to go on some of your ghost walks and then kind of report about them in certain podcast episodes. So before I get into more of that, I want to know, every single one of us is affected by COVID-19, and I'm sure your business is no different. I was supposed to go to Niagara-on-the-Lake this weekend. It obviously got postponed, and I'm sure many other walks and tours you have are in the same boat. So Daniel, how is this whole thing affecting your business, and where do you see it going in the future?
That's a very good question. I've spent some sleepless nights trying to figure that one out. To be honest, I'm not 100% sure. I think this is really a new experience for all of us. Although, understanding the situation as it stands, my hope is that, you know, that it calms down, that people get a little bit more comfortable around each other. But any type of tourism business such as mine, I think will have a harder time coming back. And the reason I say that is because we're in the unfortunate situation of dealing in groups. So even if it's outdoors, and some of my stuff is also indoors, when you have a larger group of people together, you know, if people are paranoid about the sickness, the COVID-19, then they're going to be hesitant to come out. So I don't see the tourism industry coming back very strong in the near future, depending where this goes. My hope is that, you know, there's already good strides right now with medication. My hope is that eventually they'll come with a vaccine, and at that point then everything can go back to complete normal. But as it stands now, to be honest, I'm not very optimistic, but I am hoping out for the best.
Right, and I think so many others are in the same boat as you. You just really have to take it one day at a time. So you touched on touring with groups. On average, what are the size of your groups for your tours?
It depends on the location, but anywhere can be from anywhere from 15 to, say, 25. If it's an outdoor location, there's a little bit more leeway.
Right. Just a hypothetical situation here, and then we're going to talk more about your past and how you came to the moment of where you're at right now. Let's say a drug or a vaccine is implemented to fight this thing. Even if that happens, it's still looking to be a further down the road, and I think the return to public gatherings and tourism and things like that are going to be staggered. So would you consider doing something like making people wear mandatory PPE or providing some in order to make people feel more comfortable if, you know, there is a drug and a decline in the virus? Or have you even given that any thought yet?
Not too much thought. I'm waiting to see what comes out. I don't want to put too much time in it when anything can change overnight. So when the time comes that things start opening up again, that's when you know, that's when a lot of my industry will react. And I hope, you know, like similar folks in my position, you know, we can get together and everybody can find out the best methods. One of the tours that I run, as you mentioned, is in Niagara-on-the-Lake, and out there being part of Niagara Falls, that is a very supportive community. So I know a lot of those groups will come together, including myself, and we'll come up with the best methods to make sure that our customers are comfortable and safe.
Absolutely, because safety is number one for everyone right now. So just a quick story to share with you. I originally booked a tour in downtown Hamilton with you on Friday, March the 13th, and the way my day played out was I actually recorded the first two episodes of this podcast that day, and I was going to go to Hamilton that night, but that's the kind of the day when everything just seemed to hit the fan all at once. And my intuition which I rely heavily upon, just told me to stay home and not go. So I was just curious, did you go through with that walk on the 13th, or did it get postponed as well?
You mean in regards to the COVID-19 stuff?
Yeah, the one that was scheduled in downtown Hamilton on March 13th.
That was actually one of the last tours I ended up doing, because things hadn't really, they hadn't done the lockdown yet. There wasn't any state of an emergency, and as well, I sent it out there, whoever, comes, and, a good number of the people did end up showing up. It went well. There wasn't any problems.
Oh, that's good to hear. It's just one of those things where I had a funny feeling, and I thought maybe I should just play it safe, but we'll definitely do that up again in the future. So, Daniel...
Do you think that the fact that it was Friday the 13th factor into any of that, making you a little nervous?
You know, normally I'm not really superstitious about that day. I just got this really funny feeling about hitting the road that night, so I backed out. But, I mean, it's a good question to ask for sure.
Yeah.
So I want to go into your past. This first episode of this podcast, I mostly did a State of the Union address. I identified myself, my belief system, and why I'm doing this. And a little bit of reading I did up on you was saying that you used to be a paranormal researcher investigator, I believe as far back as 1999. I want to know, growing up, kind of what wanted you to go into that field in the first place?
Well, I'll give you the quick version of that story, otherwise we'll be here forever.
Sure.
But it wasn't nothing to do when I was younger. When I was younger, I did live in an almost century-old house, and I never had any experiences, but my brother swore that there was a little boy that haunted the place. He said that he saw a little boy watching him sleep, and I would joke around and say, oh, that was just me, I like to watch him, but it wasn't. It was just something else in that house. Never really affected me. But then later on, I was living in Toronto at the time, surprisingly, because I'm a Hamiltonian, born and raised. And while in Toronto, through a series of events, I found out about an abandoned house in Hamilton called Bellevue. And Bellevue was considered like the Amityville House of Canada, these supposed murders and possessions that had gone on inside this house were just amazing. So eventually coming back to Hamilton, finding the house, which used to be on the end of Concession Street near Sam Lawrence Park.
Mm-hmm.
And we went out there, and the front door, I want to say, is wide open. We didn't break anything, so the door's open. It's just too good to pass up. So we climbed up into the house, 35-millimeter camera, took a whole bunch of pictures, did a little investigation. It was daytime. It wasn't night, so we
right.
didn't go too far into it. And then afterwards, maybe a month or two after the visit, the landowner went against the city's wishes and demolished the house in the middle of the night. So here we have this former beautiful historic house. I don't know if anybody's aware of Whitehorn Mansion in downtown Hamilton. It looked pretty much like that, but it had still a covered widow's walk at the top. And it's gone now. So we had the only photos of the house that remained, and this is what prompted us to wrote up the article. My ex, she did the photos and created the website called Haunted Hamilton, and then from that article it kind of spun out from there.
Right. You touched on something about the landowner demolishing the place in the middle of the night. Some other researchers I've talked to in the last month or two have told me that it's really hard to get access into certain spots, especially here in Ontario. I'm just wondering, are there certain spots in Ontario you would like to explore but just cannot get access to?
And we're talking about to set up like an investigation?
Either to set up a tour or an investigation, whatever you'd like to discuss there.
So for investigations, you know what? Any investigators listening right now, I'm going to tell you, I feel for you. I felt that pain many, many times over, and even before starting a business and having, insurance and everything that these locations want, even now, because of my subject matter, it's hard to get in. And I don't know why it has such a stigma to it, that they don't think it's serious, that they don't think it's a legitimate thing, but I digress. So getting back to the point of finding locations, there's not a lot. And to be honest, if you want one of the more famous locations, in there. If it's a museum, the museums will usually not agree to do an investigation. So what are you left with? Well, you're left with maybe a couple places, such as the Screaming Tunnel in Thorold, where it's public land, so you can go there at night legally, or residential. So if you do start up an investigative group, I highly recommend coming up with a waiver that the owners can sign and setting up residential investigations in haunted houses. And I'll tell you, the ones that are not covered, the houses that haven't been featured and been made popular, you'll find some of the best stories there.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, because to me, some people may not want their story to be widespread. So that's something to factor into account as well. During your investigation days, what were some of the safety concerns that you and your team ran into? And what are some that some people should watch out for but may not realize are out there?
Safety concerns as in rocks, like tripping over stuff? Or
yeah, any hazards you can run into on an investigation that some might not expect.
Really depends. Like if you're looking at the physical hazards, I mean, for the indoor locations, it's totally fine. For outdoor locations, I have to call one place out. Are you familiar with the Blue Ghost Tunnel?
Fresh my memory on that one.
Sure, no problem. So in Thorold, you got the Screaming Tunnel, which is the one that everybody knows, but not too far away from it, there's an old train tunnel that went under the Welland Canal that would eventually be known as the Blue Ghost Tunnel because of a ghost photo that was taken that had like a blue mist in it. So this this old train tunnel was the location of an accident. A train collision happened in there and a conductor died. So it's gotten like a bit of a legend to it. Now, the people who have gone out there at night, they'll find that they end up with a lot of resistance from the landowners. Sometimes the landowners don't care. It's just too much trouble for them to try and stop people from trespassing.
Right.
Or just leave it alone. But in this case, they are aggressive. And there's a reason they're aggressive. And I didn't know why they were aggressive until I went and visited the place myself. This was years and years ago when it still wasn't too bad. And walking down the trail, it's daytime, it's not even night, and you turn to the right, and it takes you to the path to the tunnel, but if you turn to the left and walk maybe 50 feet, you'll fall into an abandoned Welland Canal.
Oh, wow.
I'm talking a 100-foot fall to your death.
Yeah.
There is no fence, and it's bushes, so you don't even know the precipice is coming up until you're falling. So I can see now why the owners were very aggressive in stopping people from going out there, because all they have to do is turn left instead of right, and they might die.
Wow. Yeah, and just quickly, for those who don't know the area, like Thorold and the Welland Canal is down near Niagara Falls in the Niagara region, and even if you drive down the highways down there and you go under or through the tunnels, like the structures are just massive, so I can just imagine getting lost and taking a wrong turn could easily be fatal, for sure.
For sure, and yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, the tunnels are absolutely beautiful, and they should be seen. I wish they could do some kind of historical supervised tour where it would be more safe. But yeah, no, the Screaming Tunnel, which you can look up on Google Maps if anybody's interested, and the Blue Ghost Tunnel are maybe a 5-minute drive from each other, so they're actually quite close. And yeah, it's located in St. Catharines off of the Glendale exit.
This is tremendous information. This is one of the reasons why I want to talk to investigators and people like you, is that there's always more than what's on the straight and narrow track. So, I mean, we'd like to know this kind of stuff is out there and if we can see it. So, Daniel, during your career as an investigator, what are some of the most amazing sights or findings that you ever recorded or saw?
Now, again, I got to go back to St. Catharines for this one. I'm sure some people who have heard me talk about this are probably getting very tired of hearing it, but it's an amazing, amazing spot. And if anybody's from St. Catharines, they know the White House of Rock.
It's, yes, yes.
Where they broadcast 97.7 Hits FM.
Yep.
It's the AM stations as well. That house is, in my opinion, one of the most haunted I've ever dealt with. And it's because of there's this energy. energy inside of it. I think it's like a male energy, and I don't even know if the thing was human, but if you want to, if you're a skeptic and you want to believe in ghosts, having an encounter with this thing would just seal it. So I'll just a couple quick notes. We did an investigation there in 2001. It was my very first official investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was me, my ex, and two psychics, Kate and Michelle. And during the investigation, it was actually quite calm. Some stuff was coming up. The psychics were quite disturbed to be in there. We were just floored by the history. I mean, the place is absolutely stunning. And then after the investigation, that's when things got kind of weird. So we're walking. The first thing was we're walking back to the car, and I realized, okay, it's me, my ex, Michelle, but I don't see Kate. And then I turn around and look, and Kate, she's standing underneath this amber light. It's the only light in the parking lot. It's in front of the garage. And she's underneath the light, and she's stone still, her hands and legs, her hands at her side, and she's not moving. And she yells to Michelle that he's trying to possess me. So me and my ex were standing back. Like, this is the first time we've worked with Kate and Michelle. I've worked with them many times since.
Uh-huh.
And Michelle runs over. I mean, she knows exactly what she's doing, right? She's the experienced psychic. And she starts doing a clearing on Kate, and not sure what to expect. The timing was insane because she said the words, Michelle did, she said, "He's gone." And at the moment that she said that, the amber light shut off for about 3 seconds or so and then turned back on, and Kate could move again. So there's that. And then afterwards, this energy decided to follow us home. So we had things happening in our apartment, like there was some greenery on top of the cabinet that had been moved down to the fridge, and it couldn't have fallen because it was placed in the exact spot that it was up on the cabinet. That's about a 3-foot drop. As well as one time I left the living room and came back, and it was almost like something had taken a handful of dirt out of one of the plants and had sprinkled it lightly over the carpet in the living room and dining room. It wasn't the cats. The cats were in the other room, and there was no, like, paw prints in it. So wow. At this point, as well, the cats were starting to turn on each other. These loving twin cats were trying to kill each other. And also, I couldn't go into the living room at night without feeling an extreme amount of dread. And I'm not afraid of the dark, but I just couldn't shut off the lights when I was out there, and at night it just felt so much worse. So at this point, I'm like, okay, I've got to do something about it. We got to get rid of whatever's here. And I ended up contacting Michelle because she was the experienced psychic, and she
yep.
said, okay, you're going to do a clearing, and here's what you got to do. You got to be brave. You got to face it. You're going to go into your living room there at night. You're going to turn off the lights, and you're going to confront it. You're the living being. You have the power. You have the advantage here. Just confront it and show it that you want it to go. So I did it. I go into the living room. I shut off the lights. I close my eyes, and I will never forget the feeling. It was almost like somebody was standing right in front of my face. Like there was a face in front of mine, and the air was being blocked. So I that was motivation. So I got angry, and I started telling the thing to get the F out of my home. You're not welcome here. Leave now. And after a couple of little bursts of anger, it was almost like the air lifted in the room. And the thing was gone. So then it jumped over to Michelle's place. Michelle cleared it. It jumped over to Kate's place. Kate cleared it. And as far as I know, it just went back to the radio station house there.
That's unbelievable. I've heard countless stories about how, you know, to get rid of attachments or entities, sometimes all it takes is talking to them. And depending on what type it is, you either be gentle or polite but firm, or you get angry. Like you just said, it takes one of them, and more often than not, they'll go away. And I'm glad that it got away from you guys for sure.
Yeah, no, I put that point out there to any investigator, whoever has an issue with possession or being negatively affected by ghostly energy, is just know fear is what makes you weak. If you, even if it's a feeling of anger, which I don't subscribe to, I think you can be firm without being angry, but even if you have to be angry, you got the power. We got more energy because we're living beings. So, yeah, we're definitely in control.
Excellent stuff there, because people who want to get into this stuff and start doing even their own investigations, I don't think they're fully aware of some of those types of dangers that are out there. And just one more question on that front. What advice do you offer investigators in order to protect themselves before an investigation, if you have any?
It depends what you subscribe to. I've worked with many psychics before. Kate and Michelle were less religious and more spiritual. So for them, it was the very common one of picturing yourself being surrounded by a white light.
Yep.
And I've worked with other psychics who are extremely religious. Like there's a psychic, Mickey, at Mystic Mojo here in Hamilton, and she gets her group together and they do a prayer, and they do the white light thing as well. There's a bit of a ceremony before they go in. So from a spiritual point of view, that's very important. From a more logical, I guess, point of view, is just try not to make it a joke. I always say that if you make it a joke, it's almost like you're stirring the energy up, like you're poking at it, you're goading it to do something, and then it might focus its negativity on you. And I'm not talking like horror movies where your head's going to spin around or a knife is going to fly off the wall and stab you in the face. Like, that doesn't happen. What might happen is that you'll feel emotionally affected. Like, it will change your mood. And it might affect how you act towards your loved ones. You don't want that. So for that reason, I would say stay serious and respect it. And by respecting it, your natural psychic defenses will come forth.
Right. You definitely don't want to poke the bear. Daniel, I could talk about this stuff all day with you, but we only got a few minutes left here. So I'm going to shift focus onto the ghostwalks.com and your current business. So when did you decide to stop doing investigations and start up this endeavor?
Almost immediately. I know that.
Do tell.
It sounds terrible to say, Phil, but seriously, I am not cut out for this, because ghost investigation is not like what you see on TV where things happen automatically. Sometimes you'll be investigating. I'm sure you know that, right? You'll be investigating for days, and you might get like a light EVP. And I did not have the patience for it. So what I switched to was what my passion has always been is writing. I'm a storyteller, so I switched to that. So when people shared their experiences, I then converted it and I told their story for them. So then I would write articles for the Haunted Hamilton website. When I parted ways with Haunted Hamilton and switched over to the Ghost Walks, I've continued that way. And the Ghost Walks were perfect because it's basically just history and storytelling. So that was always my interest. So as an investigator, I lasted officially till 2004, so about 5 years.
Yep.
But unofficially, I switched to being a writer pretty much after the first investigations.
Right. I mean, 5 years is quite a long time for someone in that field. And just from talking to some other investigators who will be on this program in the near future and doing reading and research, like, there's a lot of dead and downtime while investigating, and it may not be very exciting or even very profitable. So, I mean, yeah, like, you gotta react quick to what you're doing and make the decisions. And it looks like you made yourself a really good one. So, a brief explanation, if you go onto the Ghost Walks website, you basically have locations from different cities and different buildings, indoor and some outdoor locations. And from what I've gathered, have you hired actors to work at these locations to sell, like, the story?
Yeah, actors, storytellers, and public speakers. So basically a script is created to best represent the location's history and ghost stories, history that supports the ghost stories, and then those who can convey it in the best way audition and become the guides.
And like you said earlier, when you're on an investigation, you don't want to treat it like a joke and stir up, you know, any entities, especially negative ones. But when you're casting for these and you're hiring actors, you want to make sure that they are fully in the part and they take it seriously. You don't want them treating it as a joke either. Otherwise, the whole mystique would fall apart, would it not?
It's very true. But I'll tell you, from like seeing a peek into the acting community, they are a very serious bunch. They take their craft very seriously. So when they come in an audition knowing the material, I've had a few who made a joke of it, and usually they don't make it. But yeah. The ones who take it seriously and show it its needed respect usually make the best guides.
So on your website, there's a little FAQ section where it says, how does this differ? How do we differ from other ghost walks? And then that's when I discovered the performance aspect of it. Just to elaborate on that, what else are you doing differently that other ghost walks or tours aren't doing in Ontario right now, or, you know, when you were running full-time?
Yeah, you know, I've been on many tours, not just in Ontario, but I've also gone down into the States and done some of the tours there. And some of them are absolutely spectacular, but then the other ones that fail, I always see they tend to fail on two aspects. The first, they can't tell the story to save their life. So the story is very confusing. They go forward and they come back. They lose the audience's attention. They're not being detailed enough, and they're not really trying to make the ghost story seem legit. And then that leads into the second thing is they're treating it like a joke. So mm-hmm. That's touching on what we already talked about. Like in Salem, I was so disappointed in that one. And the guy just made the whole thing a joke. Like, she didn't believe in any of it. It was it was ridiculous, and it just ruined the experience. So definitely respect to the story and treating it with respect overall.
Oh, 100%. Could you tell me quickly about the places that you do tours with ghost walks, and if there are any that you want to assign tours to, but you haven't been able to as of yet?
You know, some of the locations, like everything has kind of its theme and feel. Niagara-on-the-Lake is definitely one of the best. That town was just made for that stuff. And Canada's most haunted, in my opinion. And as well in Hamilton, downtown Hamilton, like locations that feature different landmarks, the history and ghosts, they're very robust. So you're going to go, you're going to hear a lot. You're going to hear a lot of history. You're going to hear a lot of great ghost stories. But then they're more specific. So like we just had Castle Kilbride up in Baden added. And this place is wonderful. So a historical mansion. So it focuses on the family who lived there, its significance to history, and the ghosts who haunt it today. So it's not as robust as an outdoor tour, but it's definitely extremely unique and interesting. Or if you go up to the Hermitage Ruins at night, we take you out into the haunted woods in the evening time, and that has its own feel and stories to it. As for locations I'd love to get into, well, definitely the St. Catherine's House, the Merritt House there, the Lighthouse of Rock.
Mm-hmm.
I call them every year. And every year they ignore me. They don't want any part of this. At all. And, you know, some locations in Toronto, some interesting places out there. I wouldn't say Castle Loma. I don't think Castle Loma is haunted. And I won't get into that. We don't have time. But there's the Spadina House beside it. That seems pretty good. I'd be interested in that. We used to do a couple places in Hamilton, the Scottish Rite and the Custom House.
Right.
Custom House, most haunted building next to that one in St. Catharines. I was very sad when they decided not to have the ghost tours there anymore. Completely their decision. Same with the Scottish Rite. They just didn't want to have that element anymore. This might change in the future, so I'll keep my fingers crossed for that.
No, for sure. And Castle Kilbride is pretty close to my neck of the woods, so I'll definitely be checking that one out when things return back to normal. Couple more questions here, Daniel, and then we'll wrap it up. First one is there anything really crazy or memorable you've seen on these walks, or are they pretty on the level, so to speak?
You know what? Like different locations have had different experiences. I'll tell you the three most active ones in Hamilton for me, because I spend most of my time, I live in Hamilton, and that would be the secluded ones, right? So you get the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, the Custom House, and the Hermitage Room. one of the tours, and this was towards the beginning, and the coordinator there had a horrible habit of forgetting that we were coming. So we would show up sometimes, they wouldn't be there. I'd have to drive the dumbass to pick the guy up and bring him in, open the building, and we could start the tour.
Oh, wow.
But this had happened a couple times, and then there was one time I showed up, and I knocked on the front door because it was locked, and I heard somebody talking. So I put my ear up against the door, and it sounds like there's two women on the other side talking to each other. Now, it's muffled. I can't hear what they're saying. And at this point, I just assume that the workers are in there, and they're just, you know, playing with me, that they're just pulling a prank.
Yeah.
So I start banging on the door. I'm like, okay, come on, guys. I gotta open it up. The people are coming. And the talking stopped. And at the same time, one of the workers, Brian, he comes walking around the corner, and he sees me banging on the door like a madman, looks at me like I'm insane. He unlocks the door, he opens it up and goes in. He turned off the alarm system, and then we walked in and realized the building had been empty. There's no displays, nothing was playing, no explanation for why I heard those women's voices.
Huh, interesting. Well, Daniel, this is Unexplained Incorporated. We do a lot with the paranormal here, but it's not the only thing we cover. Like, all unexplained phenomena, I'm going across the map. So I'm just curious, is there other unexplained phenomenon that you believe in, or do you just stick in the paranormal realm?
I really am just in the paranormal realm. Like, are you talking about, like, aliens?
Yeah, aliens, you know, cryptozoo, whatever. I'm going to be covering all that stuff, so I'm just curious to see where people stand on those types of things.
Well, you know, aliens, I'm not a huge believer in. It depends which angle you go. I won't get into that. But definitely with the cryptids like Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster, I have no doubt there are so many species in this world that we don't even know exist. So to say that Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster are out there, I can definitely subscribe and believe in that.
Fair enough for sure. Well, Daniel, we're just about right out of time here. Thank you so much for the time. You provided so much great information, and we'll definitely have you on here again in the future to talk about some more specific subjects. But just before we leave, let's just tell the people where they could find you, and tell them about your YouTube channel as well. I just stumbled upon that, and it was kind of cool. And you're still doing a podcast as well, or no?
Well, the YouTube channel that I just created now kind of acts as my podcast as well. So
okay.
Ghostwalks.com is the main one, and you can get to the articles through there. But then I just started a YouTube channel called Ghostly History, and going through some of different haunted locations and telling its history. That just, I guess, look Ghostly History up on YouTube. It'll eventually appear once I get more than 5 subscribers.
Hey, we all start somewhere. Daniel? Thank you so much for the time. All the best to you, and we'll go on a walk together when it is safe to do so, and I can't wait.
Sounds good, Phil. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to listening to future episodes.
No problem. We post every Friday night, so I'll hook you up.
Thank you.
Well, there it is. Hope you enjoyed my interview with Daniel Cumerlato. I very much enjoyed talking to him, and we'll have him back on sometime down the road. Check out ghostwalks.com, even though they aren't taking any bookings right now. It will pique your interest, trust me. It's worth the look on the World Wide Web. In the meantime, my name is Phantom Phil. Thank you for listening, and I really hope that you took what I said early on in the show to heart. I'm not going to be as candid and as opinionated on the state of things as often, but once in a while it just feels good for it to come out. And everybody stay healthy, stay safe, and most importantly, stay strong. And until next Friday, the doors of Unexplained Incorporated are now closed.